Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Krisus Daf Chof Dalid. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's Shiur will begin from the last few words on Daf Chof Gimel Amud Beis. Before we begin our Gemara, just a little bit of a recap of what we had mentioned in our last shiur that will be relevant for the opening of today's Gemara. In our Mishnah, we had seen a machlokes between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim regarding someone who had set aside an Oshom Talui and discovered that he did not sin, he had not sinned at all before the Oshom Talui sacrifice was slaughtered. According to Rabbi Meir, being that you have now discovered that no sin was done whatsoever, the animal reverts to its chulin status. In other words, the whole separation or setting aside and dedication of the animal was for no purpose. He hadn't sinned. According to the Chachamim, the animal retains sanctity and it's therefore set aside to graze until it develops a blemish, at which point the animal would be redeemed and the money used for purchasing voluntary offerings. Our Gemara opens up with a comment of Rav Sheshes, wherein he says that Rabbi Meir will concede to the position of the Chachamim, namely that an animal that was designated as a sacrifice and it is found not to be necessary, that it nevertheless will be sent out to graze till it develops a blemish. Marking-wise, in our Gemara, we have the use of a triangle in two different positions. At the bottom of Chof Gimel Amud Beis, you will notice the triangle point facing up, wherein we have written on the side of our Gemara under the Mivneh heading, the structural note, that this represents Moide Rabbi Meir LeChachamim. Rabbi Meir will be conceding to the Chachamim that there is a case where Rabbi Meir will agree that it's sent out, that the animal, that the designated sacrifice is sent out till it develops a blemish. Later, on a few lines down on Daf Chof Dalet, you'll notice an inverted triangle where the Chachamim will concede to Rabbi Meir regarding the setting aside of an Oshom Toli that's then found to be unnecessary, that it doesn't need to graze till it develops a moon, but will automatically be declared chulin. So let us now open up our Gemara with, as we said, the last few words of Chof Gimel Amud Beis. Omar of Sheshes, Moide Rabbi Meir LeChachamim. Rabbi Meir will concede to the Chachamim that there is a case of an Oshom Toli that's set aside to graze till it develops a blemish. We're talking about, an Oshom Toli that's unused. A case where a person has set aside two animals, each one to serve as an Oshom Tolui, one serving as a backup for the other. That if anything should happen, if he should lose one of them, so the other one will be offered. That's the case of Achrayas, Viniskapir Ve'achas Man, and in actuality, he slaughtered one of them without anything getting lost. Desheni, the other one that's still there, that was set aside to be a backup, Desheni Yire Ad Shiyistoev, it shall be, Yire is sent out to graze, until it, Yistoev means develops a blemish, Vimocher, and in its blemish state can be then sold, and the money that you get for the sale, Viplu Domov Linadova, the money will be used for the purchase of a a gift or voluntary type offering in the Beis HaMikdash. My Taima, why does Rabbi Meir concede in this case that the unused Oshom Tolui is set out to graze till it gets a mum and doesn't automatically become chulin? The Gemara explains, Ad Kan lo polig Rabbi Meir alein de Rabbonon. up till now, the Rabbi Meir disagreed with the Rabbana Elo Mishum de Logoli Daite the Liboy Noikvoy. There was no open manifestation of his conscience bothering. This was a factor that we discussed at greater length in our previous shiur, which was the reason, the fact, and the main factor for the Rabbanan in the case of the unused Asham Tolui. It is that it is still treated with sanctity insofar as that it doesn't automatically become chulin or mundane. And that's because of this issue of the conscience bothering the person. So in the previous case, the case featured in the Mishnah, over which there was a controversy, Rabbi Meir said that when it was discovered that the person did not sin at all, so that the Oshem Toli that he set aside doesn't need to wait till it develops someone, but automatically becomes chulin. That's because there was no issue of some type of open manifestation of his conscience having bothered him. Therefore, his separation in that case of the Korban Oshem Toli was really for naught. When, of course, it was revealed that no sin had taken place. Aval hocha. But in this case, michti chadhu de'iboye leila frushi. This fellow needed to set aside only one korban osham toli. My time afrish trei. Why did he set aside two? One to serve as a backup. The savar, he figured, e mirchis chada, if mirchis means gets lost, if one gets lost, mechaperna, I'll get my atonement through the other one. The kevon de goli daite de libo nokvo hoya hoyel vekach gomar vehikdisha. We see this person is very concerned about his achieving atonement. Something is bothering him. There's an open manifestation from his actions, from his setting aside a second one to serve as a backup, that something is bothering this man, that he has something on his conscience that we call liboi noikvoi. And therefore, when he set aside these animals as an osham tolu, he set aside with a full-fledged dedication, commitment. And therefore, even though the second one was not necessary, wasn't used, it nevertheless has that initial label of sanctity, thereby warranting its grazing till it develops a blemish, and not an automatic reversion to a chulin status. At this point, we have a long point coming up, Rabbi Yehuda's comment, and as we indicated earlier, we have the inverted triangle indicating here the Chachomim will concede to Rabbi Meir that there's an example of an Oshem Toloi that automatically, when of course it's a case of Oshem Toloi not used, will automatically become chulin and no need for it to develop a blemish. On the outside margin under our Nosei heading, across from here, we have written the Nosei, the topic heading, L'Rebbe Yehuda, according to Rabbi Yehuda Amarav, Moidim Chachomim L'Rebbe Meir, the Chachomim will concede to Rabbi Meir, but Oshem Tolui, in the case of an Oshem Tolui, Shehuzmu Eidov. Imagine someone had been ruled to bring a korban because he had testimony had been made that he ate some, let us say, sofek chalev. Two witnesses came and testified, you know, what you ate was sofek chalev. And now those witnesses were found to be edim zoymimim. We'll call it a form of false testimony, whereby two other witnesses came and said, how could you first guys testify when you were with us on that day that you said so-and-so ate the sofek chalev? So in such a case, where the initial defendant's need to bring a korban was based on testimony that was subsequently shown to be a false testimony through Hazoma, there the Chachamim will concede to Rabbi Meir, Shiyira be'eder kechulin, that the animal is set out to graze like a regular chulin, mundane animal. Chulin gemurin, complete chulin. Rabo cholek alzu. We'll see later in the Gemara that Rabo disagrees. Umuva behemshech ha-Gemara, the machlokes Rabbi Yehuda v'Rabo. Later in the Gemara, it will be pointed out that the machlokes Rabbi Yehuda and Rabo makbil the machlokes Rabbi Elazar v'Rabbi Yochanan. It will be a Tanaic, an Amoraic controversy between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yochanan that parallels this Amoraic controversy between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbah. So that the general issue that we'll be dealing with in the upcoming lines has to do with the need to bring an Asham Toli as being disproven or the relieved because of the testimony of additional witnesses. The Gemara. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav. Moidim Chachamim L'Rabbi Meir. The Chachamim who originally disagreed with Rabbi Meir in our Mishnah will concede in the following case, B'Asham Tolui, regarding an individual had set aside an Asham Tolui based on the testimony of witnesses, Shehuzmu Adov, that those that obligated him to bring the Asham Tolui were now found to be Adim Zoymimim, false witnesses, the Yetze Vira Be'eda, that Asham Tolui will go out and graze in the herd as a chulin animal. My time all. Ad kan lo pligi rabbonon ole de Rabbi Meir. Up till now, the chachomim had argued with Rabbi Meir. Elohecho de afrushe al pi atzmoi, where the person had set aside on his own an Asham Tolui. The Amrinon, the Rabbonan feeling, Liboy Noikvoi. Why did he set aside the Asham Tolui? Because his conscience bothered him. And with that he made a full-fledged dedication. And that even though later on it's discovered that he didn't need to bring the Korban, nevertheless it's treated with sanctity insofar that it's set out to graze till it develops a mum. That's what the Chachamim originally spoke about. Abel hecha the alpi edim afreshe, but in this case where the setting aside of the korban was only because of the testimony of two outside witnesses, it wasn't as if the defendant or the owner himself on his own volition set aside the korban. He was forced to set aside the korban because of the testimony of witnesses. Lo have a samuch ilui the edim. The individual himself knew he hadn't sinned. He wasn't relying on the witnesses. He didn't believe the witnesses. It's just a fact that if two witnesses come and we haven't disproven them, that obligates him to bring this Asham Tolui. This savar, the owner figuring, Dilma asu edim umazmi lehu. Maybe other witnesses will come and show these guys that are forcing me to bring the korban and will reveal them to be false witnesses. Therefore, here the Chachamim, unlike what they had described before, here we're dealing with a person who doesn't have liboy noikvoy. Mosiv Rabbah. Now Rabbah raises an objection. You'll see this long question lasts a number of lines and it's illustrated through our markings, the kuf that's encircled to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text with a descending vertical dashed line showing you all of these lines form the question. Mosiv Rabbah. Rabbah raises, as we said, an objection. We have a quote from our Mishnah, Shor HaNiskal Eino Kain. In the case of Shor HaNiskal, the Chachomim don't disagree with Rabbi Meir. Namely, Im Ad Shelo Niskal, if it was found that the animal had not killed anyone, and that was revealed before the animal itself was stoned, Yetze V'yira V'yeder. It goes out to graze as a perfectly allowed, permissible animal in the owner's flock. Hechi Domi. What are the circumstances that it became revealed that the animal had not committed the murder? Ilema, and then we squiggle under the ilema, so just to bring out the feeling of stages of analysis, two lines later you'll see we squiggle on the ela as well to show the additional stage in analysis. So what are the circumstances behind this case of the Shor HaNiskal? Ilema de osu betre amri horag, if you're to say that two witnesses came and said it killed. Ube tre amri lohorag, and two more witnesses came and said no, it did not kill. And it's based on this that you're going to say that the animal is going to go free. My choses detzais
Lebasroi, what is it that you see to listen, Tzayas, to listen, to heed the testimony of the second ones that said it didn't kill? Tzayas lu lekamoi, why don't you stay with those that said it did kill? In other words, it's a very even thing here, so that why should you listen to the second guys any more than the first? And yet in the source, we seem to be placing a premium on the testimony of the second witnesses. El olav be'ide hazoma. It must be a case where the second witnesses slipped the rug from under the feet of the first witnesses through the process known as hazoma, which case the Torah says we believe the second witnesses. So in this case, the Chachomim do not argue with Rebbe Meir, but we can infer in this case of the Shor HaNisgal they don't argue. U'degavasah gabi osham tolui. The parallel case then of the Oshem Tolui, of the parallel, when we say parallel, means something is revealed before the process happens to the animal. So we said in the Shor HaNisgal, it was revealed that it didn't kill. How was it revealed that it didn't kill? Through Edim Zoymimim, through the Edim Hamazimim, the second set of witnesses. So that, as you probably know, in a Mishnah, when you have different sections, it has to be the same circumstances, so that however we describe this case, we'll have to describe the earlier case too. U'dekavaseh gabi osham tolui, the case regarding the osham tolui, where it was discovered that the person didn't need the osham tolui, it must have been the Eidei Hazama, that there were Eidim Zomimim that disproved the testimony of the first witnesses. U'pligi, but yet over there the Rabbanan do argue. They argue and say that the animal, though it is shown to be unnecessary, nevertheless it's still holy, and it's set out to graze, as it said at the very beginning of our Mishnah. So how can Rav Yehuda Amar Rav say that Moidim Chachamim LeRabbi Meir, when they're not Moidim to Rabbi Meir? Omar Le Abaye. So now we have an answer. This answer lasts a few lines. The Dilma Shor HaNisgal, it could be that the case of Shor HaNisgal, that the Mishnah says that it goes out to graze as a permissible chulin animal, is Hechidomi Kegoin Shebo Horug Baraglov, where the supposed victim of the murder actually comes walking back alive and well. U'dekavosei, and then the parallel case of Oshem Tolui to this is U'dekavosei Gabi Oshem Tolui, where Rabbi Meir argues with the Chachamim, and where, of course, there we wouldn't say Moedim Chachamim Rabbi Meir. The case where they argue is Kegoin Dehukra Chaticha, where the remaining piece, remember in the case of Oshem Tolui there were two pieces. One was Chaliv and one was Chulin. And the case that was discovered, the Oshem Tolui was not needed, is that the remaining piece was revealed to be the Chaliv, to be the problematic piece, and that what he ate was not Chaliv. And hence he doesn't need the Korban. So it's in that case where the Hukra Chaticha, where the remaining piece became identified as the Chaliv. But where the original setting aside of the Oshem Tolui was only because of testimony of witnesses, and under such circumstances the defendant himself knew he didn't sin, but what could he do? Witnesses were saying he needs to bring the Oshem Tolui. So in such a case, then the Chachamim would not disagree. Because under those circumstances, Ein Livo Nokfo, he doesn't have a guilty conscience. He doesn't have a feeling of guilt that makes him dedicate the sacrifice with any commitment. so that at this point in the Gemara, we're able to revert back to what Rav Yehuda said, that in the case of an Ashram Toli being set aside based on the testimony of witnesses, if they're found subsequently to be found Edom Zomimim, even the Chachamim will agree to Rabbi Meir that the Ashram Toli becomes automatically full-fledged Chulin without any need for it to graze. Be'plukta. The Gemara points out then that the machloikis that we've had till now between Rav Yehuda Amar and Rabbah parallels a machlokes between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yochanan. Before we go further, we glance at the Rashi across from here. Biplukta ki hechi de pligi Rabo of Rabbi Yehuda Eliel. Just like Rabo and Rabbi Yehuda were arguing, diomar moidim chachamim b'ashem tolui shehuzmu edav upalugale Rabo the oisve mishar niskal. Where Rav Yehuda had said that the Chacham will be moida to Rabbi Meir, and Rabbah asked from the case of Shor Niskal, Hochinami pligi Rabbi Yochanan v'Rabbi Elazar. Similarly, Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar have a machlokis. The Gemara continues, Asham Toloi Shehuzmu Edov, a case of an Asham Toloi set aside based on witnesses, and those witnesses were shown to be false through Hazama. Rabbi Lezer Omer, Hare Hi Keminchas Knos. We're going to treat it the same way as we would do the meal offering in the case of the Sota. The Sota is the woman suspected of infidelity, and in the course of dealing with her, she brings a meal offering. Desanya, and it says regarding the Sota, Nimtzu Edeho Zomimim, if the witnesses that testified that she had been in private were then in private with another man, which is what gives rise to the whole Sota ceremony, if those witnesses were shown to be false, Minchosa Teitse Luchulin, her mincha, her meal offering that she had to set aside, automatically becomes common flour, and it becomes chulin. Very similar to what Rav Yehuda has said above. Rabbi Yochanan Omar, Rabbi Yochanan said regarding him, Nashem Tolui, Shehuz Mu'edav, Yireachi Yistoev, Vimocher Vyubludomov, Linadava. It shall be set out to graze till it develops a blemish. And that is like Rabbah. In other words, even though it's a case of Edim Shehuzmu, nevertheless, it's still the animal, the El Shem Toli still has this level of sanctity that it cannot revert automatically to Chulin until it develops a blemish. The Gemara asks Rabbi Yochanan, Nidamye Leminchas Knos, why doesn't Rabbi Yochanan say that we'll treat the El Shem Toli just like we treat the Mincha, the meal offering, in the case of the Isha Sota, whose witnesses, those that originally charged her with having been problematic, were then found to be false. And we said in the case of the Minchas Kinos, the Mincha brought by the Sota, it becomes Chulin. So why doesn't Rabbi Yochanan parallel the case of the Ashram Tolui She Edov Huzmu with the case of the Minchas Kinos She Huzmu Edov? So Rabbi Yochanan answers, Lo Domi, the two cases are not parallel. Minchas Kinois, Loi Lechaporo Kaasio Levar Ovon. The bringing of that meal offering is not for the purpose of offering atonement. It's rather part of the ceremony to reveal whether or not she had sinned. And therefore, when the basis for suspecting her is removed, so the mincha becomes chulin. Avol Asham Tolui de Lechapor Asi, but Asham Tolui, which is set aside to offer atonement, Mitoch Shelibo Nokvo, since the person's conscience bothers him, it's true that his initial need to bring it was based on testimony, but that can arouse a sense of, we'll say, doubt in a person's inner being, and create a sense of what is called libo nokvo, that his heart bothers him. Gomer umakdisho, he fully dedicates himself and commits himself to the sanctification of that Asham Toli. Hence, even in the case of Edim Zomimim, since the Oshem Toli is coming for atonement purposes, the person's commitment is a very strong commitment to the sanctification of the sacrifice is very strong, and therefore it will not be set out to it won't become automatically chulin, but needs to develop a blemish before it can be redeemed. You'll notice that we have a slash mark in the Gemara indicating that which follows is a new idea. On the outside margin under our no say heading, we've written Shor HaNiskal Shehuzmu Edov. A Shor HaNiskal was an animal condemned because of a suspected murder. There are other capital offenses that would warrant an animal to be stoned as well. So if you have a Shor HaNiskal, this is a condemned animal, but the witnesses that were responsible for its condemnation were then found to be false through Hazama. Kol ha-machzik bo yizocha bo. Anyone who grabs this animal after the witnesses are shown to be false, it becomes theirs. In other words, the animal is in a state of hefker, of non-ownership. 2 points will be featured. Nirba shoro, actually more than 2 points. A case of an animal who was charged with bestiality through the testimony of witnesses. Rova hu shoro, or a case where a person had intimacy with the animal. Ir hanidachas shehuz mu'edov will be a case of a city charged with idolatry based on the testimony of witnesses that were subsequently shown to be Edim Zomimim, false. We now turn to the Gemara. Omar Rabbi Kruspidoi, Omar Rabbi Yochanan. Shor HaNiskal Shehuzmu Edov. The condemned ox whose witnesses that were then shown to be false after the ox was condemned to be stoned. What happens now? Kol ha-machzik boy zocha boy. Anyone who grabs the animal, is able to keep it. In other words, that from at the point that there was a gemar din, at the point that there was a court ruling that it is to die, it establishes the animal as unowned, as hefker. Rava, Omar Rava, Mistabro Taimod Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan's teaching is most likely Kagon de Amri Lei Nirba Shoro, where the testimony initially was your animal has been used or has participated in bestiality. So in such a case, we say that the animal will then be considered hefker at the point that the court ruling is issued. Aval omru loy rova hu shoroi. If the testimony was regarding the owner himself as that he committed the bestiality with his animal, hu ba'atzmo meida yedia delo rova. The owner knows he didn't do it. We're talking, of course, about a case where these witnesses were subsequently found to be zoymimim. The owner knew all along that he did not commit this act. V'lo mifgarle, v'tarachu ma'isiedim. He doesn't declare it unknown, unowned. He knows all the time from the very outset that he didn't do it, and he's figuring that he will find witnesses to undo these guys that are testifying against him. The Gemara asks, "Umay shno meha diomar rabo bar isi omar Reish Lakish." What is different about the case we just had and that which Reish Lakish teaches? Ir hanidachas shehuzmu edeha. A city of idolatry. In other words, witnesses testified about the population that they committed idolatry.
and they were then found to be false. The rule concerning an ir hanidachas, we should preface, is that the people are killed, and the property is destroyed. All the portables in the city, the owned possessions of the population, are gathered to the main square and are destroyed. In a case of ir hanidachas, says Reish Lakish, that the witnesses were found to be false, kohamachzik bo zochaba. Anyone who then grabs any of those possessions is able to keep it. Even though, and here's the point, even though each individual knows that he didn't worship an idol. And using the logic we saw before, he then was not mafkir. He didn't declare unowned. He didn't agree to such a hefker status for his possessions. And nevertheless, we see that it is hefker. So even though the individual knew he didn't sin, his possessions are, according to Reish Lakish's teaching, considered unowned. That is a problem for Rava. The Gemara answers, no problem. Ir hanidachas, the rabbin ninu, the case of a city where there's a testimony concerning their idolatry, it can gain a ir hanidachas status, even though everybody, even though only a majority of the people had committed the idolatry. That then gives rise to the following: kol chad omar, every individual in the city says, kol chad omar bedaite, was figuring, ano lo chatoi achrino chota, I didn't do the sin. Now, we should have pointed out maybe earlier that in ir hanidachas, even though the innocent people, their lives are spared, nevertheless, their property is to be destroyed. So each individual was figuring, well, I didn't sin, I didn't serve an idol. Someone else did. Umifkar mamone. And based on this, this state of mind, where he may be certain about his own behavior, but that doesn't affect his possessions. His possessions will be destroyed anyway, because of the fact that others, the majority, did serve idols. So at that point, when we have just the first set of witnesses, he really concludes he is mafkir his property. He isn't like, it's not like the case before. Avol hocha, the Gemara goes on to say, in the case of witnesses testifying about a private individual that and pointed their testimony directly at him, saying that you committed bestiality with your animal, dividei talia milsa, where the whole issue focuses on him alone, who be'atzmo me'diyoda de'lo rova, he knows that he didn't do this sin, he didn't commit the bestiality. Velo mifkar lei v'torach l'maisiedim. He at no point concedes to the hefker of his property, in this case, of his animal. At no point did he even have a hefker thought, because he knew he was totally innocent, and he was figuring that I will until anything happens, I will try to find witnesses to undo these first fellows. And when he is successful, so the animal is to be spared and not open for grabs by anybody else. As you notice, there's a slash mark indicating that that which follows is a new idea. Before going into the Gemara, let's glance at the topic heading we have, the under the nose say, Hanoisein Matono Lechavero. We're going to discuss someone giving a gift to his friend, the Omar Halo, and the receiver reacts by saying, "Efshi ba." I can't deal with this. What happens at that point that the receiver or the designed receiver says, I can't accept it, or "Efshi ba," that language? Kol hamachzik ba zocha ba. So, Reish Lakish says that
anyone who happens to take the item is able to keep it. Velo amrinon the hadra lamara. And we don't say that, well, when the receiver says he can't take it, that it automatically goes back to the giver. Even though we have a slash mark in the Gemara, there is a point of connection between this upcoming Gemara and that which we just learned was this idea of kol hamachzik bo zocha bo. However, as far as a trend of thought is concerned, it's a brand new idea, a new topic. The Gemara. Omar Reish Lakish. Hanoyse maton lechavero. Someone is intends to give a gift to his friend. The Omar halo, and the receiver says, E.F. Shibo, I cannot. Kol hamachzik bo zocha bo. Anyone who takes it is able to keep it. And as we said, Reish Lakish is basically saying it doesn't automatically revert back to the owner or to the giver. Before going on in the Gemara, we have a new geometric form for our sugya, a triangle, and we have this explained under the mivneh heading in the outside margin. The triangles represent kushyos al din hanal. Questions will question Reish Lakish's teaching. You will notice that these questions continue down Omid Beis as well. The Gemara asks, Umay Shno, what is different about this teaching? Meha di Omar Rabo Bar Avuamar of Sheshes, the Amri Law, another version of names, instead of Rabo Bar Avua, rather the Omar Rabbi Avo Omar of Sheshes. Mekabel Matona Sheomar Laachar Shebos Matona Liyodo. A receiver of a gift, after he took possession of the gift, declares. Now, we've broken down this teaching into two parts, Roman numeral number one, and on the bottom line, a Roman numeral number two. So, after receiving the matana, the fellow, the receiver, says, Matana zu tibotel, mevuteles, ef shiba. Following the girsa of Rashi, lo amar klum. These statements of matanazu tibotel mevuteles ef shiba are of no consequence, and the receiver will be considered in possession of this gift. The explanation for this is that these expressions of tiboteo or mivuteles are expressions that have a future connotation, that the matana should be void. But how that if it being that it has this future connotation, and we know he already accepted it, so once you accepted it, it becomes yours, and just to say that it will become void has no meaning. And as a result, if let us say this receiver happened to owe money to someone else, his bal chov, the creditor, could come and take this item. Continuing in the in this halacha, b'tei lohi eino matana, if the receiver uses these expressions, b'teilohi or eino matana, dvorov kayomin. These expressions don't have the future connotation, but rather connote something at the very outset. It was a non-matona as far as I, the receiver, am concerned. Rashi points out at the second line from the bottom, Elo Seifa Tumiolon Adereish Lakish. This Seifa, this section, this Roman numeral number two, is what creates the problem that we are raising here as a question on Reish Lakish. The Kotoni, Rashi goes on to say, Betelohi Eno Matona. These expressions, if the receiver said Betelohi or he said Eno Matona, Dvorov Kayomen. Why? The Lishaovar Mashma. It has a past tense connotation. The Hochi Ka'omar, and thusly the receiver is declaring, Kishikibaltia, Lav Lishay Matona Kibaltia. When I physically accepted it, I didn't accept it as a gift. And there's a rule that says, V'hodas Baal Din, the confession or the revelation of the litigant, Kimeo Edim, has the power of 100 witnesses, therefore we believe him. Lefikach Dvarav Kayomin. So now, when the receiver says, B'teili Eino Matona, we say that what he says has meaning, Dvarav Kayomin, my lav, we are now at the top of Omid Beis. What is intended by this expression of Rav Sheshes, when he says Dvarav Kayomin? V'hodra Lamora. And it goes back to the original owner. That when you have a giver of a gift, and the receiver says that I don't want this gift to be considered a gift, we say his words have meaning. And but what's the result of his meaningful words? Is it not so that it goes back to the giver? And we've dashed underlined the Hodra Lamar, because this is the main point. And we don't say that it becomes considered Hefker. So that, to make matters simple, the problem is, Reish Lakish said that when a person says something that has significance, that has bearing, and there's an indication that the gift is not to be viewed as a gift, what's the outcome? The outcome is that it's considered unowned and anyone can come and grab it. However, we see here that when someone says something that indicates his disinterest in the gift and that it takes hold, what is the result of his words taking hold? The result is that it reverts back to the giver. Loi. That's not the pshat. That's not the explanation of Rav Sheshes. Dvarav Kayomin. The receiver's words have meaning, have significance. Velo Hadra Lamora. It doesn't go back to the original owner. Vehu Nami, the receiver also lo konila. He also is not in possession of it. So not the original giver, nor the receiver are in possession. V'chol ha-machzik bo, zocha bo, anyone who comes along to grab it has a right to it. Just like Reish Lakish. So that though we assume Dvarav Kayomin implied it goes back to the original owner, in answer for Reish Lakish, say no. Dvarav Kayomin simply means that the receiver doesn't get it because he declares his disinterest. But it doesn't revert back to the original owner either. Meisve, once again, we raise a problem. Ha'omer lechavero, and this question lasts a number of lines. You can see we've used a long marking, the number 2. It appears to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text with a descending vertical dashed line shows the length of this particular question. The source, the Tanaic source that you can see in a frame, says ha'omer lechavero. We're talking about someone who had been a partner with someone in a particular field. And one partner declares, Ha'omer l'chaver, din u'dvarim ein li al sodezu, ein li esek ba, v'yodai misulekes himena, loi omar klum. So the partner uses some type of expression, one of these expressions. We can't be too detailed in our explanation because whatever we would say now is going to be clarified or changed later on. So let us simply say that you have different expressions here that indicate his lack of interest. The partner is declaring his dismissal or his removal from this particular field. And one of the expressions he uses is V'yodai misulekes heimena, literally, my hands are removed from the field. The source says Lo omar klum, which would mean nothing takes effect, and he doesn't lose his ownership in that field, his part ownership in that field. The Gemara now points out, this expression is ke-i-efshi domi. It's like the expression that Reish Lakish had used in his case, where the receiver said i-efshi. The Katani, and it says loi omar klum, that he doesn't lose any of his holding in it. He doesn't lose his holding in it at all. Well, that is unlike Reish Lakish, because we saw in the case of the receiver having said e efshi ba, the item became unowned. Here we see a parallel expression, and the result is lo amar klum, that nothing happens. In other words, there is no removal of from ownership. The Gemara answers that this source that in which the partner had said din udvorim ein li al sodezu is really a case where he didn't use separate expressions of removal from field, but it was one long statement that he said. He said din udvorim ein li al sodezu. He said that as one expression. And the Gemara explains, "Shiny Hosam." The case of the that was in this last Tanaic source is different. The Amrinon, we say that Kisalik Nafshe, when he declared he was removing himself, he said Yodai Mesulekes Hemena. He really meant Midin Udvorim Solik Nafshe, which means that he has no intent to argue with anyone over this field, because this field is mine. Migufa de soda lo solik nafshe. He isn't removing himself from possession of the field whatsoever. Rather, to the contrary, this man is declaring that he's so convinced that he has a holding in the field, and is thereby saying, I have no intention to, dinudvara means I have no intention to argue with anyone, to enter into any discussion concerning ownership of this field, because it's so clear that it is mine. Hence, this case has no connection, no relevance to the din of Reish Lakish. Meisvei, we raise a question, and you can see this is a rather long question. We once again have a long indicator, a length indicator here, to the immediate right-hand side of the text. And eventually we will be developing a question on Reish Lakish. Hakosev Nechosov L'Achirim. The case involves a person who is deathly ill. He's a Shkiv Meira, and he's assigning his property to others. He's giving it away as a gift. V'hoyu bohen avodim. And amongst his holdings were slaves. V'omar halo. The receiver said, e efshi bohen. The same expression that we saw earlier with Reish Lakish. It says in this source, im hoya raboi sheni kohen, if the receiver, rabo sheni, literally his second master, but it's a reference to the receiver, happened to be a kohen, oichlin betruma. They're entitled to eat the tithe given to kohanim. As a general rule, the possessions of a kohen are able to benefit from truma. So an eved that was featured here in this case, an eved is considered the possession of its owner. If its owner is a kohen, so it's able to eat truma. And of course, we're talking about this case where the receiver said ef shibohen, and yet the avodim will be able to eat truma. Reb Shimon Gamliel Omer, kevon di omar ef shibohen. Once the receiver says, I can't deal with this, I don't want this matana, so we say, Rashi introduces a principle here of hochiach seifa al-chilaso. It shows then, regarding the giver of the matana, that if the receiver doesn't want to take it,
so then it remains in my possession. And kvar zachu bohen yorshin, the heirs of the giver, because we spoke about the giver as being deathly ill, the heirs of the giver retain these slaves. The Gemara continues, Bishlam Alder of Shulam Liel, as far as Shulam Liel is concerned, we're not going to see a question on Reish Lakish from Rav Shimon, from the comment of Shulam Liel. Kosavar, Rav Shimon Liel is of the opinion, Ki Yoyev Inish Matana, when a person gives a gift, Adaita de Mekablin Le Lamine, he gives it with an expectation that it will be received. Kiloi mekablin lamine, when it's not accepted by the receiver, hadru lamora, it goes back to the original owner. This is the principle that Rashi pointed out. Haychiach seif atchilaso, the final results show what the initial intention was, and being that the receiver didn't want to accept it, there was therefore no initial matona gift intent. So, Reish Lakish we could take a look in the Rashi for further clarification. About halfway down, there's a Rashi, Bishlama Midrib Shimon. Rib Shimon is a reference from Shimon Liel in this source. Lo Kashi L'Reish Lakish. There is no Kasha, no problem against Reish Lakish. Since Reb Shimon Gamliel is of the opinion that we say that the ends casts light and clarifies the beginning, lo yotsu miyad harishon, they never left the first owner. Kiyoyev inish matona v'chulei. Avol l'Reish Lakish mishekona hefkira. According to Reish Lakish, when a person actually does get possession of a gift, and then he says, efshi, that is tantamount to a declaration of non-ownership. So as far as Rav Shimon ben Gamliel in this Tanaic source is concerned, there was never a receipt of the gift in the first place. Hence, this does not pose a challenge to Reish Lakish, who spoke about a situation where there was a receipt. The Gemara continues, Elo l'Tana Kama, but according to the Tana Kama, who doesn't use this principle of Hochiach Sofo Al Tchilaso, and therefore the second person ostensibly gains possession, Elo l'Tana Kama, I ki Omar Yefshi Bohen, if it were so, like Reish Lakish says, that Kol Amachzik Bohen Zocha Bohen, anyone who takes possession of that which the receiver had declared, efshi bohen, anyone can come and take possession. Hocha v'yomar sheni, efshi bohen. Here where the Kohen receiver said, efshi bohen. Havu luhu zorim. Since the rule is, according to Reish Lakish, that anyone who wants to take possession can take possession. So these avodim, in effect, take possession of themselves. The receiver didn't want to get them, he said, Eyefshi Bohen. According to Reish Lakish, they become Hefker. Therefore, in a state of being unowned, they become their own owners. And as such, they're not. Kohanim, Havaluhu Zorim. They are Zorim. And the Ko'achli Zorim Truma. And the Tanakhama said that these slaves will eat truma. Well, how can that be? They're non-Kohanim. So from the Tanakhama, you see that the statement of efshi bohen does not make them like hefker, something unowned, and hence enabling them to possess themselves. Reish Lakish, though, has said that in the case of efshi bohen, the gift items become, in effect, unowned, and anyone can come and grab them. So the Gemara answers, Kosovar, Reish Lakish holds Hamafkir Avdo Yetze Lecherus. It is true that when a slave is declared unknown, he goes free. However, Vitzorech Get Shichur Meirabo, he needs a document of release. A Get Shichur is the document, a document of release from slavery. Vikosovar, and he is of the opinion that Me'ukov Get Shichur Oichel Betruma, that as long as he hasn't received this document of release, he's called a Me'ukov. He's delayed from freedom as a result of the need for this Get Shichur. He's called a Me'ukov Get Shichur, and as a result of that, Oichel Betruma, he is considered still owned and not Hefker, and is considered still owned, or in effect owned, by the receiver, who happened to be a Kohen. So that it's, even though the receiver had gone through the motions of Hefker by saying E.F. Shibohen, he's gone through the, we'll call it a declaration of Hefker, nevertheless, it's not enough. He still needs to receive a Get Shichur, and until that happens, he is considered in the ownership of the receiver, and he's able to eat truma as a possession of a Kohen. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Yikrav. Rabbi Eliezer in the Mishnah had spoken about someone who set aside an Osham Tolui, and it was revealed that it was not necessary. So Rabbi Eliezer was of the opinion that if it doesn't come for this sin, so it can come to atone for another sin. And therefore, it retains its Osham Tolui status and is not sent out to graze, but rather is brought as a sacrifice. The Gemara asks, regarding the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer, the Rabbi Eliezer Loma Li Chot or Chet, why does Rabbi Eliezer mention in the Mishnah that if it's not needed for this sin because it was revealed that he had not sinned, it can be brought for another sin? Why mention anything about another sin? Ha'omar Rabbi Eliezer, the Tana Rabbi Eliezer is known to say, have said, Osham Tolui bin Adama Asi, that an Osham Tolui is a type of korban that can be brought as a voluntary or as a gift offering. This man, Rabbi Eliezer, Omer Misnadev Adam Osham Tolui b'chol yom. A person can make a voluntary dedication of an Osham Tolui every day. That being the case, since it can come as a nidava, why does the Mishnah mention in the context of Rabbi Eliezer that if it's not coming for this sin, it's coming for another sin? The Gemara answers, Omar Ravashi, Rabbi Eliezer di Omru Lohu. It's Rabbi Eliezer, it's true it's Rabbi Eliezer in the Mishnah, but it's Rabbi Eliezer after Omru Lo, means after the Rabbanon had responded Disnan. Now, what is it? What is the reference to the Rabbanon having the Rabbanon's responding? Well, the Rabbanon had said in a different context, Ela Omrim Loi Hamtein Ach Dikones Lebeis Hasofek. The Mishnah on Daf Chof Hei Omed Aleph, the next Omed of Gemara, has Rebbe Lezer's comment of Misnadev Odom Osham Toli B'chol Yom, and in that Mishnah a story is told concerning Bava ben Buta, who wanted to bring an Osham every day and said he was willing to bring an Osham Toli even on the day right after Yom Kippur, even though Yom Kippur is a day that offers atonement for Osham Toli related problems. He nevertheless was willing to bring an Osham Toli immediately after Yom Kippur. Well, the Chachomim told Bava ben Buta that you're going too far, so to speak. You should wait until you encounter an area of doubt. In other words, of a possibility of having sinned. Right after Yom Kippur, that isn't the case. So just wait a little bit. So you see that the Chachomim were telling Bova ben Buta, who is really represented by Rebbe Eliezer here, that you should wait till an element of sin arises. So in that spirit, we understand the Rebbe Eliezer comment in our Mishnah, that if it's not coming, if the Osham Tolui is not needed for this particular sin because it was shown he didn't do it at all, it can come for another sin. That, as we said, is a reflection of the Chachomim's response to Bava ben Buta, which is, we'll say it's an additional aspect or added dimension to Rabbi Eliezer's Shita. Continuing in the Gemara, Im mishenishchat noida, if after the animal was slaughtered, after the Oshem Tolu was slaughtered, it became known that he did not sin. So let us continue now in the Gemara. The Gemara will point out a problem. Before actually learning the Gemara, let us look at our nosei, our topic heading in the outside margin. Ma oisim im korban shemizbarer shelo hoya letzorach. What do we do to a sacrifice that was shown to have not had any need? Options are sreifa, burning, or kvura, burying. So now we continue in our Gemara. Kotani, it said in such a case where after it's slaughtered, said in our Mishnah that after it's slaughtered, it became revealed that he had not sinned. It said that the boser is yotze lebeis hasreifa. And that's this quote, Kotani haboser yotze lebeis hasreifa. Alma, we see that chulin shenishkatu bazora b'sreifa, if we reveal that he had not sinned, so then there was no need for the sacrifice. In effect, the sacrifice was chulin, was unnecessary, it was then mundane. And you have a case of chulin that was slaughtered in the temple courtyard. The Mishnah tells you how to deal with it, and it says, burn it. V'ramini, we raise a contradiction, and this is a new marking with regard to our sugya. So on the outside margin under the Mivneh, you'll notice that this house form is featured, and we're describing it as a ma'akav, a form used to keep track of a give-and-take style of Gemara, with the narrow part of this, or the roof facing up. This represents kushios, or stiros, problems, questions, or contradictions. The flipped-over house represents tshuvos, responses. So let us see the question. V'romini, osham vadai, eino kein. We saw this in our Mishnah, that an osham, a korban osham, not an osham totally, but an osham that's brought under known circumstances of sin, Eino Kane, there's no machlokis Rebbe Chachamim with Rebbe Meir, and the rule is im ad shelo nishchat, if it's revealed that no sin was committed, and that revelation took place before the Oshem was slaughtered, yetze v'yira b'eder, it goes out to graze as a regular chulin animal, and the Chachamim agree with Rebbe Meir on that point. Now the main focus for us is this: mishenishchat hareze yikover. If after the animal was slaughtered, it was revealed that no sin had taken place, how do we deal with it? What are we talking about? If it's revealed that no sin had taken place, in effect, retroactively, we see that this is chulin, shenishchatu bazara, and it says in the same Mishnah, harei zu yikover. You notice we've dashed, underlined this, indicating the problem. It says that chulin, shenishchatu bazara, basically are dealt with by burial. So we have a response. Omar Rebbe Lozer. This we are also labeling number one because Rava will offer his response on the next line, number two. Omar Rebbe Lozer, Tavra. Tavra literally means split apart or break apart. Mi shishonazu lo shonazu. The Mishnah is understood to have been taught by two different authorities. Even though it's in one Mishnah, two different opinions are represented. The earlier opinion that said Yetzel the Beis HaSreifa holds that the way you deal with Chulin Shenishchatu Azara is by burning it. according to this this section of the Mishnah under the Oshem Varai, the way you are to deal with Chulin Shenishlus Lamazor according to this opinion is through burial. So that even though it appears as one continuous Mishnah, there are really two different opinions represented here. Rabba Omar, Rabba disagrees with that approach and says, Osham vadai al Osham tolui ko ramis. Are you trying to raise a stira from the case of Osham vadai back to the case of Osham tolui? There's a fundamental difference. Osham vadai, the case of the Osham vadai, kevon delo tzorich le lo makdish le. When it's revealed that no sin had taken place, it was then, it's then basically revealed that it was never really sanctified. Osham tolui. The Osham tolui, though, is not brought based on, it's not brought under circumstances of a sin having been committed, but rather a function of a doubt. Maybe a sin was committed. And therefore, mitoch shelibo noikvoi, Goimer umekacho. The Osham Tolui is motivated by a, we'll call it a guilty conscience, or a internal need for atonement. And as a result, it is definitely sanctified. Let us glance at the Rashi. Rashi is found a few lines down from here. Osham vadai, mistamo lo akdashe. It's most likely that he wouldn't have sanctified it, ihavi yoda de lo tzorichle, if it were revealed that the sin never took place. Hilkoch hekdish tolsu. Therefore, it's considered a mistaken sanctification, and it is called Chulin Bazora. And the way you deal with Chulin Bazora is, like it was mentioned earlier, it is burnt. Aval Osham Tolui HaSofek Hu Lei. The Osham Tolui is brought under circumstances of doubt. V'havi Sofer D'Shema Lo Chota. And he knew that there is a possibility he never sinned. And still he dedicated it. This reveals to us that he's got this conscience factor at work. The Gomer Vigdishoi, he sanctifies it with a full intention. And as a result of that, it's not considered Chulin Bazora. That's Velohave Chulin Shinishkutu Bazora. It is like other kotshim that a psul developed, ubisrefa, and it is to be burnt. We just have to, for the sake of accuracy, just correct ourselves that in the case of Osham Vadai, that is buried because it in effect is, that is the way you would deal with Chulin Shenishlutu Bazora, through burial. But the case of the Osham Tolui is not Chulin Shenishkutu Bazora. It is a case of a korban that became unfit. A korban that becomes unfit, the way that is dealt with is through Sreifa. Hence, there's no contradiction whatsoever in the Mishnah. And furthermore, there's no need to say that there are two different opinions regarding how you deal with Chulin Shenishkutu Bazora. There is only one case of Chulin Shenishkutu Bazora in this mission. That's the case of the Osham Vadai, found to be of no necessity. However, the case of the Osham Tolui is a straight out case of a korban, of a full fledged korban that was then found to be with a psul, with a deficiency, and the way you deal with a kochim shenifsalu, that is through burning. Continuing in the Gemara, Ela I Kashya, if there is any question to be raised, Osham Vadai al Osham Vadai Kashya.
we can raise a stira within the topic of Osham Vadai. Dikotoni, Hareze Yikover. It's said in our Mishnah, as we saw already, that when it's discovered that the Osham Vadai was not necessary, it's buried. Emo Seifa. Well, continue in the topic of Osham Vadai, and it says in the continuation, in a situation where the carbon was slaughtered and the blood was sprinkled, and it was then shown that no sin had taken place, it said, "Vabosur yetsu lebeis hasreifa," and we've dashed underlined the key words to highlight the question. So you have, again, a case of Osham Vadai, shown to be of no necessity, essentially a case of Chulin Bazara, and it's burnt. How do you answer this contradiction? Ha Vadai. So answer number one is that in this case, regarding these two sections dealing with the Osham Vadai, and you see two different approaches to the Korban. So here you have to say, definitely, Tavro mi Shoshana Zu, lo Shoshana Zu, here are two different Tanaic opinions represented. Rav Ashi Omar. Rav Ashi disagrees with this approach. Hence we call him number two. He says that that basically, Chulin Shenishutu Bazorah, if it's clear and obvious that it's a case of Chulin, the way you deal with it is through burial. However, in the case that the discovery of the non-sin took place after Zrikas Hadam, if people see me burying that, people don't know all of the background. All they see, onlookers see, an animal whose blood was sprinkled. And then if they see me burying it, they'll think, oh, that's the way you deal with sacrifices that became pusul. Sacrifices that became invalidated. Which is not true. They're not treated through burial. They are to be burnt. So here in the case of the Osham, after its blood was sprinkled, was shown to be unnecessary, and in truth it's Chulin Shenishchutu Bazara, and in principle it should be buried. However, onlookers are going to think that it was simply a korban that's nifsal, and if I bury it, they'll think that's the way you deal with korbanos shenifsal in general. And that's what the Gemara means when it says Mishum de Ischazi Kezevach Posel, because it appears, Ischazi means it appears as a sacrifice that became invalidated. And therefore, so as to prevent any misunderstandings, we say in this case, burn it, so that people don't come to incorrect conclusions in general about korbanos or zvochim shenifsalu. Nizrak hadam habosar ye'ochel. Ve'amai. Why does it teach in the Mishnah that after the Zrikas Hadam, the meat, sacrificial meat, can be eaten? Ho havyo le yediya. He now knows that there was no need for this korban. We're talking, of course, about the Osham Tolui. And we were taught that the Osham Tolui, if after the blood is sprinkled, it then becomes known that there was no sin done. The Tanakama said, you can still eat the meat. But how can that be? If we've now discovered that no sin had taken place, there was really no need for him to set aside the korban. And as such, we'll call it Chulin Bazara, or something that you really shouldn't be eating. The Gemara answers, Omar Rava, Omar Kro, Vahu Lo Yoda Venislach Loi. That's the pasuk regarding the korban Osham Tolui. Veha Lo Havya Le Yediya Bishas Slicha. This owner, at the time, Shas Slicha is the time of the blood sprinkling. At the time that the blood was sprinkled, he really didn't know anything about his innocence. And therefore the korban, when it was brought and its blood was sprinkled, was fulfilling its role of offering a form of atonement or temporary atonement for the owner. And therefore it functions as it was supposed to, and it's therefore a full-fledged korban, and therefore the meat can be eaten. Rabbi Yossi went a step further and said, even if the blood hadn't been sprinkled yet, but it had been gathered in the cup in anticipation of the sprinkling, and at that point it was revealed that he had not sinned at all, nevertheless, you go ahead and sprinkle the blood and eat the meat. The Gemara asks, L'Rabbi Yossi Amai Yizrok, according to Rabbi Yossi, why are you telling me to go ahead and do the Zrikas Adam? Ho Havya Lei Yediyo B'Shas Licha. Here, he is aware that he doesn't need this korban prior to the actual sprinkling. Omar Rava. Rava answers, Rabbi Yossi Savar Lo K'Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Yossi subscribes to Rabbi Shimon's approach that says, Kol Ha'omei Lizrok Kezorok Domi. Any blood that is in the position or ready to be sprinkled is considered post facto. It's considered as if it was already done. The Gemara asks, Eimar D'Yomar Rabbi Shimon B'Midi D'Oimei Lizrok. Rabbi Shimon's rule will apply in something that is expected to be sprinkled. And his din would have ramifications for something that was supposed to be sprinkled and then something short-circuited. However, Avolhai ain oimed lizrok. However, in this case, it's not omed lizrok because it was revealed that no sin had been committed. So that you have blood in a cup before it's sprinkled. It becomes known that there's no need for this sacrifice. So at that point, you can't describe it as something destined to be sprinkled. Amri b'marova. So they explain in Eretz Yisrael, Kosovar Rabbi Yossi, Kli shores mekachin es apostle b'tchilo likrav. Rabbi Yossi is of the opinion that a service vessel, the blood, was accumulated or gathered after the slaughter in a kli shores. That's a service vessel. It's a sanctified Beis HaMikdash vessel, and it has the power of sanctifying that which is in it, even if it happens to be unfit to be offered. So that even though, technically speaking, this blood doesn't need to be sprinkled, and maybe even you could say it, in theory, shouldn't be sprinkled, but since it's in a kli shores, it is expected to be sprinkled. And therefore, even if it hasn't been sprinkled yet, it is to be sprinkled, and that's where Rabbi Yossi says, sprinkle the blood, and then partake of the meat. The Gemara continues, Osham Vale Enokain, V'chule, and it went on to talk about the Eglo Arufo Enokain. It had mentioned in the Mishnah that regarding the Eglo Arufo, if it was discovered before it went, before its neck was broken, that it was revealed who the actual murderer was. Therefore, there's no need to go ahead with the Eglo Arufo ceremony. So the animal goes free. After its neck is broken, and then the murderer is discovered, well, the animal is to be buried on the spot. Before going on in the Gemara, we have a topic heading, the Nosei, and it reads, Eglo Arufa Me'emosai Ne'eseres. At what point does an Eglo Arufa become forbidden? Rav Hununa says, Me'chayim, even while it's still alive, namely before its neck is broken, it becomes forbidden to benefit from. And Rabbah says, it doesn't become forbidden to benefit until Li'achar Arufa, until its neck is broken. So now the Gemara, Itmar, Eglo Arufa Emosai Neseras. At what point does it become forbidden? Rav Hamnun Omar Mechayim, while it's still alive, at a certain point that it's still alive, it becomes forbidden. And Rabo Omar Liachar Arifa, after its neck is broken. Bishlamo L'Rabo,
Me'idno dis avid bo maisa. I understand Rabba's position that at the point that something happens to it, that an action is done, that's a defining point in time that makes it forbidden. Elo l'Rav Hamnuna me'emosai. But according to Rav Hamnuna, that it's declared or it becomes forbidden while it's still alive. Well, from what point? The Gemara continues to the top of Chof Hei Omer Aleph. Omer Rav Yanai, Gvul Shomati Ba, I heard the time boundary that from which point it becomes forbidden, Vishochachti, and initially I forgot what my tradition was, what I had heard, V'nasvin Chavraya L'meimar, and my colleagues came to recount and said, Yeridoso L'nachal Eson Osarta, its descent to the area that its neck is to be broken in, the Nachal Eson type, we'll call it an uncultivated valley. Its descent to that area is, that's the area designated for the Megla Rufa ceremony to take place. Osarta, its descent to that point is the point in time at which it's labeled forbidden. The Gemara later on goes into the reason and the sources for Rav Hamnuna and Rabba respectively. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.